Hello, and welcome to the Learn Chinese Insights podcast, brought to you by ChineseTrack.com. In each episode, we interview expats from around the world who have learned Mandarin Chinese as a second language to find out how they learned it and how they use it in daily life. You can listen to this episode in your podcast app, as you're doing now, or you can watch it on YouTube using the link in the description. So in today's episode, I'm happy to have Karen Cheng.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so before we get started, can you give us a quick introduction in Chinese? Tell us who you are, where you're from, what you do here, and then we'll go from there.
好,我叫做史嘉玲,我来台湾已经有40年了。其实之前我也来过了,我在台湾念过书,那个时候是民国65年,那个时候那个蒋经国 还没有上任了,总统是严家盖,这一次来台湾以后,在新闻局做了一段时间,然后到台大,教了30年的书,刚退休不久。
All right. So you said you've been in Taiwan for 40 years, huh?
Yes.
Wow, a long time. And you're going through who the presidents were at the time.
Yeah, right.
So if you can go back, so what brought you to Taiwan in the first place?
Well, when I was growing up in Minnesota, my father taught me German at home, and we also learned it at school, and I found that I really enjoyed languages, so I started learning other languages as well, moved on to French and Spanish. And my brother-in-law said, well, you shouldn't just study West European languages, you should try languages like Russian and Chinese. And so I tried Russian, and I thought it was still Indo-European, wasn't that interested. And then the next summer, there was an opportunity to take a Chinese studies course, and then I found my language. So after that, I majored in Chinese in Minnesota, and then I came to Taiwan in, it was 1976, and started a master's degree in Chinese literature, went back to the States for graduate school, finished at Princeton, got married, and then my husband was from here, so we moved back to Taiwan in 1984, and here we are.
Oh, wow. So it must have been a very different world back then, as far as, you know, the number of foreigners here and how open, I guess, Taiwan was to foreigners back then.
People say that, but in fact, way back in the 70s, life here was very good. Some things were not as good. The air here in Taipei was really, really bad. I mean, blow your nose and it would come out black because the pollution was so bad from the cars and the motorcycles, the two-stroke motorcycles. So the air was not good and people didn't really seem to notice. And of course, it was not quite as open, but it was mainly just political things. So if you just were a little careful about politics, it was actually quite free here. It wasn't that different. The people were nice. The food was good. There was stuff to do. So yeah, it's become much more colorful and more stuff going on now. But like I said, back in the 70s, life was already very good.
Mm-hmm. So normally, if you learn a language overseas, so in your case, you learned Chinese out in the US, when you graduate from that, is that enough Chinese to be able to come here and get by?
If I had relied completely on university courses, certainly not. It was funny that year that I came here in 1976, there were 13 of us from the same university, all came to Taiwan, all from Minnesota, learning Chinese. So you say that there are so many foreigners now. There were a lot of foreigners back then already. A lot of them were here. Well, there was the U.S. military was still here at that time. But a lot of us were here to learn Chinese and then to teach English as well. So learning Chinese, if I had relied only on university classes, I'm sure it would not have been enough. But while I was in Minnesota, I had a lot of Taiwanese friends. And there was one in particular who I spent a lot of time with every day practically. We went bowling together. We went to potlucks together, went traveling together. So we did all kinds of stuff together in every new situation. I'd have to learn how to talk about what we were doing in Chinese. And I would make ridiculous mistakes. The one I remember best is when it was breakfast time, they asked me, 你要吃什么蛋? 我说我要吃混蛋. Everybody was laughing. I had no idea what was wrong. I just wanted scrambled eggs. Mm-hmm. So I made a lot of mistakes like that. But my friend was so patient. He would correct my mistakes, do it in a smiling and laughing way. And that's really how I learned. I learned a lot from my classes, but I wouldn't have picked up the speaking without that.
Mm-hmm. Over the time that you've been here, has being able to speak Chinese, has that been a big part of your work that you do here?
Oh, absolutely. So first, when I was a student back in the 70s, you needed Chinese because I majored in Chinese literature and linguistics. Mm. So your Chinese had to be at a pretty high level already in order to handle the coursework. So yes, then. So when we returned in 84, yes, my work was doing English editing, but also a lot of translation. So yes, I used Chinese every day. In fact, after a while, because everybody in our office was Taiwanese and we were speaking Chinese all the time, I realized that my English was actually getting a little bit halting. Mm-hmm. So I had to start paying more attention to keeping up my English at the time. So yeah, and I've been doing that till now. I realized you can't neglect your native language.
Mm-hmm. So I would imagine, like, these days you see a lot of foreigners who come to Taiwan and they live here for, 10, 20 years without really learning Chinese, and they're able to live a comfortable life here. Is that possible, like, in the 70s and 80s?
I think so. It was, people wanted to learn English then just like they do now. And then they would like chase me down the street saying, "Oh, can I be your friend? Can I learn English?" And I'd say, "Well, which one do you want? being my friend is one thing. If you want to learn English, I charge, So, I think even back then people did okay. And because English was so in demand and people wanted to practice.
Now, it sounds like when you were in university, as you said, whatever Chinese you were learning, you were kind of taking the initiative to be with your friend and use it in day-to-day life.
Right.
What is that something other students would do too, or was that unique to you? And was there a big gap in your level of Chinese versus other students?
I had some classmates who did the same thing. They had lots of Taiwanese friends as well, and they also picked up the speaking much better.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, and the other ones who didn't. But it was interesting because we had one classmate who performed a Chinese play with us one year, and her Beijing accent was absolutely spot on. It was perfect. Mm. Her performance, you couldn't tell that it wasn't a native speaker. But she could only do that when she memorized her lines. If you wanted her to chat ad lib, she couldn't do it. Mm. And so she gave up Chinese.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah. It's too bad because her pronunciation was perfect.
So I believe you've had some experience with helping foreigners to learn Chinese. So what are some what are some of the suggestions or paths that you recommend foreigners take?
Okay. I taught Chinese for 1 year at the University of Hawaii. It was in 83 to 84, the year before I came here.
Yeah.
And so I had to, figure out what worked with them. I had two semesters there. In the first semester, I thought it went okay. And then I looked at the student evaluations and they had a lot of suggestions and there was a lot of things I needed to improve. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were very good suggestions. They said, for example, please give us just everyday situations, give us the vocabulary, give us some sentences we can use, like going to see the doctor or going to buy clothes or going to a restaurant. And so I followed all their suggestions. And second semester, my evaluations were much, much better. Hmm. So I think just based on that and based on my English teaching experience, I think that you definitely need, number one, to open your ears. Because I think a lot of people, when they're listening to Chinese, they're not really hearing the Chinese that's being spoken by the other person. They are hearing kind of an echo of the Chinese that they learned with a bad accent. And they keep getting stuck with that. So all of their Chinese goes through a filter through their brain. When it comes out of their mouth, it's sometimes very toneless Chinese or Chinese with the wrong tones. Or you get excited and you use English intonation instead of tones, like Mark Zuckerberg did when he gave his speech, in Tsinghua University. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you apply English intonation to Chinese, it will be, it'll sound like that. As soon as you get excited, your voice is all over the place and it's getting the tones wrong. So I think what you have to do is you slow down, you learn how to listen carefully. You absolutely have to nail the tones. And one common way is you learn tone pairs. So first tone, second tone, third tone, first tone. You learn all of the possible pairs of tone combinations. And you practice those until you do it without thinking and you get it correct. And every time you see a new expression, usually it'll be in two words. In Chinese, they're often in pairs. Then you just plug in that tone pattern that you learned when you were practicing, and you can get the tones right. I think that's the first thing. A lot of foreigners, when they learn Chinese, they think, well, you know, if you don't use the tones, if you get the tones wrong, people still understand you. They may understand you, but they are really, really uncomfortable, and they will have to guess, and sometimes they'll guess wrong. My example from the TED Talk, if you've seen that, is 我想吃饼. Well, what in the world does that mean? So is it hot or cold? Right. So if you say 我想吃饼, there's no word in Chinese that's pronounced 饼. There's no word at all. It has to either be 饼 or 饼, which are one's hot and one's cold. So that's a situation where if you get the tone wrong, people just don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Even if they can guess in other situations, it's exhausting. Just like when you listen to a person with a really heavy foreign accent speaking English, we often don't want to talk with them that long. It's just too tiring. So people need to believe that it matters. They need to work on the tones until they just slip out correctly. So that's my suggestion. Really, really work on the tones. Mm-hmm.
And how about as far as characters go? Is that something you recommend people learn right from the beginning? Or would you separate that or what?
Okay, I will first tell you what I went through when I was a student back at the University of Minnesota as an undergrad, and what I think other people might prefer doing. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I had found my language. I was already in love with Chinese. Everything I did, I learned how to cook Chinese food, and I read Chinese novels. It's just everything I did. I love Chinese music. Everything I did, somehow I could find a way to relate it to Chinese. So the characters also fascinated me. And before I went to the University of Minnesota, I actually went to Germany for a year. While I was in Germany, I was practicing characters every day. So by the time I came back to the US to continue my Chinese studies, I already knew a lot of characters. And they were fine with me. I just practiced them until I got them and I could keep up okay. But I was extremely motivated and dedicated. Maybe not everybody has that kind of motivation and time. So for me, I just had to know the characters in first year Chinese. They actually wouldn't tell us all the tones. They said, well, just learn the pinyin because the tones are too complicated. I go, oh, dang it, tell me the tones. So I couldn't even find a dictionary very easily. I finally got one and I thought, oh, finally I can find all the tones. So for me personally, it worked doing all of the characters all along. For a lot of people, it's just too much, I think, of a cognitive load. And also in addition, back then, we didn't have Chinese input for computers. We didn't even have personal computers back then. So now with computers, and you don't really have to write by hand, you can just use input, you can use pinyin or whatever is good for you. I think a lot of people think they don't have to learn how to write them. And I think that's personal choice. Depending on your goals, if you feel you're not going to have to do handwriting, most people don't use handwriting anyway, or you're not even going to have to input a lot, it's really going to depend on the individual. As for me, I am absolutely hardcore. Yes, do the characters.
But for you, when you said you would learn characters, so you were learning how to write them?
Yes.
So would it be, if you were to learn the characters without writing them, is it just through flashcards, that kind of process?
It's hard for me to even imagine that because the way I learned was writing from day one.
Got it.
So I guess with flashcards, you can do it and you use a lot of mnemonics. Mm-hmm. Like you see little pictures, you see little faces in the characters, like comb, it looks like there's a little face in there. I think you can do it, but just my personal experience, it was writing from the beginning. I mm-hmm. personally recommend writing, although many people tell me they just don't have time. It's too hard.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Would you say the Chinese language, like the reading of characters and how people write, some of the maybe the formalities and things are, it seems more formal in writing than it is in speaking?
Yes, it's true. On the other hand, if you can speak fluently mm-hmm. and you write exactly as you speak, Actually, that's good enough. It may not be good enough for a magazine article, but to communicate, that is good enough. If you can write everything you can speak, actually, that works fine. If you're going to be reading like the media, the newspapers and things, you're going to have to learn more complex sentence patterns and things. You'll have to learn a little bit of classical Chinese to be good at it. But as for just writing down what you want to say in Chinese, if you can speak, just use pinyin and input.
Got it. And do you have any thoughts on Juyin versus pinyin? Like, would you recommend someone learn that?
Taiwan is really the only place in the entire world that uses Juyin.
Okay.
Now, I believe that you should learn Juyin just because you'll see it in the environment. And I brought up three kids.
Uh-huh.
So I needed to know what they knew. Now, I needed Juyin because I needed to help them with their schoolwork and for other reasons. Juyin is absolutely useful. But as for learning Chinese, I highly recommend pinyin, and pinyin input on a computer is almost as fast as English. When I show it to Taiwanese, they can't believe it's that fast. For example, 万事如意, I just type four keys and there it is. With Juyin, you're still poking around with tones and everything. So Juyin, you should learn it, but as for input, I recommend pinyin.
I see. So have you found as a teacher teaching Chinese, because you're coming from an English background, you know what the students struggle with more than when a native Chinese speaker is trying to teach a Western student?
I think so, yes, yeah. So for example, word order in Chinese is often an issue because people will say things like, 我去看我的朋友今天下午. They don't realize time and place has to go at the beginning. So yeah, I think knowledge of that definitely helps. But that actually is nothing like the problem of the tones. I think the tones are what really, really need the work for non-tone language speakers.
So how about there's people who come here and then they learn Chinese for a while and they get it up to maybe a functional level and then it kind of stays there. So what would you recommend for someone who wants to take it to the next level, like to go get towards fluency? What would you recommend they do?
It depends on how motivated they are. If they are motivated, I recommend they do lots of listening. And they also do lots of language exchanges so that they can both listen and practice speaking and get feedback. Because I think the biggest problem is people will understand you and they won't correct your tones. So you kind of get a lot of deeply entrenched mistakes and you're not really aware that they are mistakes. So if you have one-to-one language exchange with a good, responsible teacher who corrects your mistakes. Personally, I think that's the best way to do it. In addition, also listen to podcasts, watch TV series and things like that.
So if a foreigner is here and they hire a teacher and you instructing them what you want the teacher to do for them, so you would say focus on those tone pairs?
Tone pairs until you really get the tones down. But also, of course, have just simple conversations about things that you're interested in. And that point is really, really important, is you have to make absolutely sure that you find stuff you're interested in. If you are just learning a bunch of maybe old Chengyu stories, I mean, they're interesting, not that useful in daily life, and they may not really help you when you want to order a latte at a Starbucks. So find something you're really, really interested in, maybe read up on it, and then talk about it with your language exchange partner or your teacher, and then have them be strict with you. That's what I think.
Got it. And then in the time that you've been here, for foreigners who have a high level of Chinese, do you feel it opens more doors for them? Like in society?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me about that.
I think that if you really want to connect with people, you have to speak Chinese well. You can get by with Pidgin English or with Pidgin Chinese, but you're not going to get very deep and there are going to be misunderstandings. And you are actually constantly trying the patience of your interlocutor. They will listen to you and try to understand, but it just takes so much more effort to understand you and you can't go as deep. When you are not that precise with your language, you're missing a lot of the vocabulary. You don't know the sentence patterns to express what it is you're trying to say. There's a perfect way to say it in Chinese and you have no idea what it is. So you you just sort of like fumble through with something else, mm-hmm. people may get used to it, but you're going to have a hard time really getting close to somebody else with that level of Chinese. It may be possible, but you really need good language skills, I think, for that.
Yeah, I think the example you gave earlier was good, where imagine, you know, you're speaking with someone who doesn't speak English very well.
And right.
How far can you get, you know, in conversation or communication that way, right?
Even if you can understand them, it takes so much effort. You don't want to just sit there talking to them because you have other stuff to do with your day, like you have to go to work or something.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, and you're already tired.
And then as far as raising kids here, so are your kids, would you say, equally fluent in English and Chinese?
Yes, I would say I raised three kids. One is my nephew from China. Mm. He was brought over from the PRC. Mm. But my own two children are pretty much balanced bilinguals, and their children now are becoming balanced bilinguals.
So yeah. For foreigners who have kids here, would you recommend they just go through the local education system?
Personally, yes.
Yeah.
And because of that, I had to really, excuse me, work on their English at home. And that was another story about how to keep their English up, because I tried, it was cassette tapes back then, you know, audio books and posters of words and the alphabet and everything, and nothing really worked.
Yeah.
And my son was like 3 or 4 years by then, and he spoke English because we had just come from the States not long ago, but he couldn't read. And then one day when I was shopping on Chongqing South Road, I happened to find a book called Teach Your Child to Read in 100 Easy Lessons, and it worked. So my son learned how to learn English. And in addition, as he got older, computers started becoming popular. He loved computer games, and he would play with people around the world, and his English kept improving that way. You know, he also watched cartoons and things in English, but being able to go online and play computer games really, really helped his English. And so he got a full Chinese education at school and then English at home and on his own.
I guess these days with things like Netflix and YouTube and stuff, the inverse right. could also be possible. If someone's in the US or somewhere and they want their kids to learn Chinese, if you can fill their media with interesting content in their target language, they could acquire it that way.
That helps a lot, but relying only on media for practice is not enough. You really need to have interaction. So as long as they're interacting with fluent speakers, mm-hmm. it will probably work. Just watching TV, you're probably going to end up with a lot of gaps.
Mm-hmm. So for people who are learning Chinese, but they're not living in, you know, a Chinese country, you'd recommend find Chinese partners or language exchange or those type of things to kind of practice what you're learning in school?
That's right. Actually, when we were living in the States, we were constantly in a Chinese bubble wherever we went. We had our whole social group, a whole social group of Chinese speakers. We were in Minnesota. We were on the East Coast of the U.S., New York State. We were in Hawaii. Everywhere we went, we had our own little circle of Chinese friends. So we and the kids got plenty of chances to speak Chinese. It's not hard to do in the States. Chinese are everywhere.
But I guess in Taiwan, when you see foreigners speaking Chinese, okay, it's normal because they're living here. But I guess out in the States or so, to see foreigners speaking Chinese is still a little unique these days.
I suppose. So we moved to Hawaii. I said I taught there in 83, 84.
Yeah.
I went there with my son first before his dad came.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking with my son in Chinese on the street.
Uh-huh.
And these Hawaiians would come by and just stare at us.
Right.
They go, what language are you speaking? Yeah, but we were used to it. So actually, I taught my son Chinese in the States.
Okay.
People found that unusual, yes.
Right.
But it worked fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it seems odd when you see a foreigner and they say, oh, I teach Chinese. They think, uh-huh. why are you teaching? It's not your native language. But then I find because you're teaching, you know where they've come from. I feel it gives you that advantage, right?
And think of how many non-native speakers we have teaching English.
That's true. Yeah, exactly.
When I point that out, they go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, for some things, they can explain grammar and things better in their target, you know, in their native language than I could. So it makes sense, yeah.
But that's another problem, is they end up with a lot of grammatical explanations and not knowing how to speak.
So how would you fix that?
That's a big question because, you know, with this 2030 stuff, I think they're totally missing the point. So at the very, very least, I would have at least 10 minutes of every single hour of English dedicated to listening and speaking. That is not done now. There is almost zero. Because they are preparing to the test. They are getting ready to take multiple choice questions, mainly just on vocabulary and on grammar. So they are not required at all or motivated in the least to practice listening or speaking. But if the teachers really emphasize that and then just gave the students actually listening homework to take home of something interesting that children enjoy, games or media or whatever it is. If they really emphasize that, tested them on it, did little performances in class, things would change overnight.
Yeah, I think regarding the grammar, I've found if you teach grammar too early, then you're just, remembering rules and things that don't really make sense. Like for me, when I was learning Chinese, I learned kind of street Chinese first before I went to the class. So then when the teacher was explaining things like jiō and cai and stuff, it kind of made sense because I'd heard so many patterns. But now she was
Exactly.
explaining what I've already heard and it made sense. Whereas if I'd tried to learn that first, here's the 9 ways to use jiō, remember these. I'm not going to remember any of that, right?
Absolutely. So you learn things in the right order. So if you already spoke Chinese on the street before you took formal classes, it's a much, much better way to learn. And yeah, it's something that they should learn from here in their English teaching. As for cai and jiō, if you just ask any Chinese, can you explain me the difference between cai and jiō? They'll just go, they can use them correctly in a sentence. And if you ask them the difference between ne and ma, they probably can't tell you that either. So as you were saying before, having a foreigner who's been trained in how to learn Chinese is one thing. It's now become pretty popular to take a degree program in teaching foreigners Chinese. So that's improving now.
All right. And then lastly, obviously in the time you've been here, technology, and you've kind of touched upon it, has advanced quite a bit over that time. Have you found any aspects? So you mentioned, for example, now people don't write much, everything is typing. Are there any other tools and resources that you use in your daily life that you think, oh, this would have been much easier for me early on?
It's hard to say that in retrospect because I think I personally view my experience with learning Chinese as very lucky and very privileged. Since I had people helping me all along and giving me feedback, and computers were just starting to be used then, and somebody had a very primitive program for inputting Chinese. So it wasn't even on our radar. So, in terms of what we had then, I think it was good enough. It was great for what we could do then. And when the technology came along, I could adapt immediately. It was not like it was something totally different that I had to learn from scratch, because I could already use Chinese fine the way it was with writing by hand and things. And as soon as, if you know pinyin, you can input. So, yeah, I personally don't have any regrets. No.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your time with us today.
Thank you so much.
All
Really
right.
nice talking with you.
Okay. Thanks, Karen.
Bye-bye.